Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah, they have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, not say it to now.
I'm down Swanfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
One of our guests today described it as the most significant moment in modern football history. The other says it will upend the structures, economics and relationships that have bound global football for nearly a century. And the funny thing is, this proposed European Super League is only the second biggest football news story of this day. Welcome to your second Captain's Football Podcast. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Owen. It's good to be able to disagree with you in your very first sentence. I think it is the most important story. However, it is there is another big story, Owen, as you have alluded to. I just object to the idea that that other story is as big as the first story that you mentioned there, Owen.
I'll tell you one thing we can all agree on, Murph. Mm-hmm. The FA Cup semi-finals will not be getting much of a look in today. Can we all
apologies in
advance. Poor Leicester. For
yeah. Ah, well, easy come, easy go. You know, you got to time your run in this sort of a situation.
Okay, well, yeah. the big story, says Ken, is Miguel Delaney and Tarek Panja. There are two guests that I mentioned. Tarek was among those who broke the Super League news yesterday, which set up a full day of rancor and recrimination, culminating around 11 p.m. last night when 12 of Europe's leading football clubs, as they describe themselves, announced they had come together to establish a new midweek competition, the Super League, to be governed by those same founding clubs. It's anticipated a further 3 clubs will join as founding members ahead of the inaugural season. Those 15 teams will compete each season, along with a further 5 teams to qualify annually based on achievements in the prior season, which is one of the most vague criteria I've ever seen put out anywhere.
Turnover, profit, or league position, who knows?
This new competition will begin as soon as practicable. Apparently, they're aiming for this August. So, I mean, the big question, obviously, is what have they got against David Moyes? But listen...
That's what I do. I win.
I mean, there are already 3 London teams in this. Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs. A Spurs team that will not be managed by Jose Mourinho. Gary Lineker says Mourinho is fired. He is the first of the European Super League managers to lose their job. We had this show just about ready to go when you... texted me with the news, Ken, that there was an additional story to the European Super League, and that is that of Jose Mourinho. I kind of feel like these two stories won't be contained by one podcast. I'm sure there will be more developments, more reaction during the week, which we will cover for our members on the World Service. If you want to hear the rest of the show through the week, sign up now on secondcaptains.com. But for now, here is today's action-packed report on sport.
Well, Owen, I was sitting there trying to put some order on my thoughts for what are we going to say about the Super League? There's so much to say. Try and impose some sort of order on chaos, some sort of pattern. You know, I don't want to bore the listeners with a morass of disconnected ramblings. And then I saw that just in the middle of all this, Mourinho had been sacked. I thought, let's just go and record. Let's just go and record because there's just no point in trying to keep up with this. Let's just let it happen. Let's just go with the flow and experience this torrent of football news that's carrying us all along right now.
By the way, I should also say that it looks like Dublin is going to be struck off the list of host cities today, maybe even by the time some people listen to this from Euro 2020. But I mean, that's not even really getting a look in. So that's how the other stories are.
At least with the Jose story, Ken, we're on pretty solid ground. I mean, it feels like we've done roughly as many Jose Mourinho sacked shows as we've done grunge weeks.
Make journalism. Yeah, it's true.
I mean, you know, we kind of knew this was... We kind of knew that Mourinho was going to get sacked. Obviously, things have been going badly. A 2-2 draw at Everton on Friday. He'd been going on about, I'll never reveal the true story of what's going on in this club. I mean, hopefully he does later this week. it seems as though his successors, at least in the immediate future, are going to be Ryan Mason, who is still only 29, I think, and Chris Powell, who are like the coaches. So they're going to take over, cruelly dashing the Carabao Cup from Jose's lips. He's not going to be able to say he won a trophy with Tottenham. But, you know, who cares? Like, it almost seems to me as though Tottenham are like a squid that's squirting out a bit of ink today in the form of sacking Jose Mourinho in the hope of scuttling away under cover of this darkness and escaping what's coming to them in the form of, you know... Like, one of the amazing things last night was watching... Because, you know, I was trying to write some stuff about this. And first of all, they were saying, oh, there'll be some news at 5:30. And then that was pushed to, it was like, oh, no, it's going to be 10:30. And then I'm like, okay, I'm up against the deadline here. I've just got to send it. And then it ended up being like 11:30 or whatever. But even still at that time, there was still, we still were able to see all of these clubs tweeting the news that they were part of the 12, the self-chosen elect of 12. Who were going to join the Super League and being ratioed out of it by their furious supporters. Like, you know, every like every club tweet announcing this was just deluged in attacks from fans saying, you know, that's it. That's me done with this club.
Game is gone. Game is absolutely
to
gone.
It was, I don't know. I mean, it's I can't remember seeing anything, certainly in football, that was reacted to in that way. I mean, obviously, the audience, at least in terms of those English clubs, the people who follow them, had been primed by some of the stuff we'd been seeing from, you know, Gary Neville and Rio Ferdinand, these impassioned tirades against the greed. That was, you know, a crime against the fans, Gary Neville called it. You know.
I saw Neville being described as the people's champion by a few people.
The people's champion. A war on football, I think Rio called it. I mean, these, like, I do wonder if they expected, they must have expected the reaction to be negative, because they're basically saying, we're going to be the kings of football now, and all of you people are below us. So they must have known that people were not going to like this, but I do wonder if they expected it to be quite this bad.
Are you, can I go back to Jose for a second? Because I'm still absorbing this news, which I literally only heard 10 minutes ago. You said that it was coming. Did you say that there, or that it's no great surprise? Maybe there are too many other things going on that I didn't realize Jose Mourinho was on the precipice at Spurs. They obviously had that game. What was his last game on Friday night? This entertaining 2-2 draw against Everton. But you're not remotely surprised that he's been.
No,
been
no. I mean, it's just hilarious that it's taken this long. I mean, it was always a mistake by Daniel Levy. We said so at the time. There was that little period earlier this season when you did wonder: is something gonna? I think I do remember Owen though saying, "No, they can't. This can't work." I do remember saying to you, just when it looked as though things, you know, our Son and Kane going to, you know, power this sort of. 1980s Italian style Tottenham to Premier League glory in this slowed down league. And I remember, Owen, I went on the record, I got down off the fence and I said, Owen, no, that's not
a lot of people started to think that they maybe would. Do you remember the game against Liverpool? I mean, at that point, were Spurs top of the league? Certainly they were 1-2 and Liverpool were still looking strong. Yet Spurs, remember we talked about that game afterwards, having a real big match feel, which a lot of the big matches haven't actually really had this season, to be honest. But that one did. It felt like Liverpool hanging on to their crowns, but Spurs, even in defeat, were impressed a lot of people. It was one of those ones where both Mourinho and Klopp walked away saying, we deserve to win. Like, we both implemented our game plan really well and both deserve to win. So at that stage, even with that defeat, particularly, I guess, if they had won that game, you would have been looking at it going, it's actually a title. It's a title run. You know, that's what they were on. And that was only a few months ago. But I mean, football is a cruel business.
Oh, no, I can't believe we're talking about Spurs. The only context in which we should be talking about Jose Mourinho. The only context we should be talking about Spurs is in the context of how did they get into this? Like, did Florentino Perez at some point order the Spurs delegation to be removed by security before somebody came up and whispered in his ear, "Oh no, they're actually who are these people? You know, who are those guys? Should they be here?" Before someone said, "No, actually, that's a delegation from Tottenham. They're one of the important football clubs in England that were considering joining this new venture."
Do you fear Spurs could end up like Italy in the Six Nations? You know, they're in this competition. There's no relegation. They're going to be in it every year, potentially getting spanked by Bayern Munich. The German clubs haven't joined. They're just going to get spanked by, you know, Real Madrid every year, and that will be their fate for the foreseeable.
Well, like Prometheus having their liver eaten out every morning, and then it grows back in the evening, and then it gets eaten out again in the morning. That would just be the story of each season. This time, I mean, although I don't know, I mean, presumably, one of the points of setting up a closed shop Super League is that you put in some sort of restraints or some sort of rules which would mean that all of the clubs in it had some kind of a chance to win it. You know, within our gilded enclosure, let there be equality. You know, which, to be honest, to clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona may not even have that much appeal, but I mean, are Tottenham really going to join a league just because they would get paid a lot, even if they would just get spanked by, I mean, surely there would have to be some sort of leveling rules as you have in the American sports. I mean, that's what this is sort of in theory based on. I mean, we should go back to like what was actually meant to be happening today. Was UEFA are still going to be having their press conference at like 1:30 apparently. Mm-hmm. But they were going to be announcing their Champions League reforms, and the Champions League reforms, remember, are like, it's like a pig of a Champions League they had designed. Mm. You know, let's have this big pig of a competition. 36 teams, league table as long as a John Delaney bar receipt. Everyone, you know, random teams play each other like 10 times, and then like most of the teams go through to the next round, and you know, we start to tune into the actual knockout phase of the competition. That was the idea. It was a terrible idea, but it was meant to placate these clubs that want more money. I mean, everyone's been asking for more money all the time. Now, I mean, the word gets used a lot in relation to this. The word the Carnival used, they want to go and set up to create more greed. Greed is an interesting word. I mean, what is really going on here? Like, I think, greed is one way to think about it. Greed, when you talk about greed, you basically say this is like a moral failing on behalf of all of these clubs. They're bad people. They're bad people. And like, I'm not going to argue too hard. They may be bad people, but why do they behave in this way? They behave in this way because the system that they're part of is broken. I think that's the main reason for it. And UEFA have actually presided over this broken system. They've been unable to prevent the system being warped and eventually, is it broken? Is it a broken system when you look at the Champions League semi-finals and three of the four clubs are there because they've got oil billions behind them? Is that a broken system? As far as a lot of clubs are concerned, it's like, well, you know, the current system is great if you've got like an oil billionaire or trillionaire backing your club. I mean, it seems to work for Chelsea, for Man City, and for Paris Saint-Germain, but it's not really working that well for the rest of us. But in the meantime, we are doing our best to keep up with these guys, and you were supposed to have brought in financial fair play rules to sort of curb their out of control spending, but we all know what happened to those, right? So what I'm saying is, when people talk about greed, I think they'd be better off looking at like the dynamic that emerges from this system. If you're going to compete with these types of clubs and the inflationary spirals that they've set off, it's a process that starts really when Abramovich took over Chelsea in 2003, then you're going to have to spend in a pretty aggressive and pretty risky way. And we've seen the worst excesses of that most recently at Barcelona. So the reason why clubs like Barcelona are signing up to this, like Barcelona, hilariously, they were the latest club, I think, to tweet the statement. And then when they had, they took out the quote from Florentino Perez. Like the bit says, first president of European of Super League, Florentino Perez said, and Perez had this ludicrous quote about how it was like, this is actually helping football. And Barcelona had taken that out. Although Liverpool were happy to put Joel Glazer's words, you know what I mean? His quote was there on their website. You know, this kind of stuff. But why are Barcelona doing this? Why are Barcelona prepared to sign up to an organization of which Florentino Perez is the president? It's because they're broke. It's because they're broke and desperate. And you see a similar... But Inter are broke. Inter are going bust. Juventus are having big problems. You know, the TV rights. What I'm saying is commercial pressure has come on. You saw the Premier League lose a massive contract for the rights in China. Is the market really that hot for the forthcoming TV rights auction? The French league's entire TV deal collapsed. They signed this mega TV deal like last summer, and then by December it had evaporated. It was gone. Right. So the Bundesliga hasn't hit its sales targets with their auction. Didn't the Serie A auction, they did the auction and then it was so far beneath their expectations that they're like, no, that won't do. We're going to have to try this again. You know what I mean? A little bit later down the road. That's what happened there. So what I'm saying is all of this commercial pressure has suddenly come on, and then you've got the pandemic as well. Now, they refer to the pandemic in the statement. I mean, you saw UEFA say, at a time when solidarity is more important than ever, or solidarity is needed more than ever in society, they do this. You know, as though you're... How could you do this now? Gary Neville said similar things. It's a scandal that they could do it now. But of course, the pandemic is what is kind of what tips this thing over the edge. Or that's why they're going, okay, now's the time to do it. But it creates a lot of interesting questions. I mean, there's so many questions about this. I mean, if this is like a test of the loyalty of fans to some extent, like, because you can see this mass disgust being expressed by fans, but how deep does that really go? Do most people feel that way? Are a lot of people kind of looking at it going, well, you know, am I really that bothered about this? Do I care? You know, what is all this about? What's the difference anyway?
I was pretty interested. Simon sent us into our WhatsApp group a tweet from Alan Smith, you know, just talking about how depressed he was by this news, you know. And I just went down through the replies just to see what people were saying, you know. And one of them was, that's it for me. To be honest, I had given up on supporting Arsenal last week. VAR broke me. But I couldn't be happier with my decision. And I'm just thinking... that doesn't seem to me like that's the sort of knee-jerk reaction that a lot of people are having right now. But fast forward 5 years, how many Man United fans have actually stepped away from supporting Manchester United? How many Liverpool fans have actually said, nah, like, fuck this, I'm supporting Everton now, you know? The reaction is still in my head within the realms of, you know, VAR is a disgrace. I can't watch the game anymore. You know, I'm going to go watch my local non-league team. And that's the thing. You know, like, we can say that there's widespread disgust amongst football fans for this, but they've put up with a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, isn't it getting more though? Like that sort of current of disgust with the sort of governance of the game. Like, you know, we talked about this, I think, recently in relation to the Qatar World Cup. Like, you know, those sorts of protests which are beginning to kind of take root. Not that they've spread particularly far, but I think are kind of an expression of that feeling of... Oh.
Do you know what? I think if this is seen as the tipping point, if this is the thing that, like, finally breaks football in two, I don't think it'll be because of, you know, the reasons in and of themselves why people hate the European Super League. It's actually a culmination of 20 or 30 years of the game going inexorably this way. Yeah. You know, like, I don't think it's this idea in and of itself that people are disgusted by and will, like, everything was right about football yesterday morning and this morning it's all broken, it's all gone. I don't think I don't think that's how people react to this sort of thing, you know? I think that it might be the straw that broke the camel's back, but this isn't like a... you know, I don't think it's like a it's a seismic shift in how football. It's just basically the end result of.
No, it is. I think it is a qualitative shift. I mean, there is a. It has been going this way for a long time, but by this way I mean with ever increasing concentrations of wealth and power in among ever fewer clubs. That's a process which the Premier League has helped to accelerate, and which the Champions League has worked to accelerate. However, the Premier League and the Champions League are both, at least in theory, still open. They're open competitions which you can qualify for. You know, you can get there. You know, the Salford City owner Gary Neville can dream of one day being in the Premier League. Well, the Super League is different, right?
Yeah. Rory Smith wrote in the New York Times today, actually, which I think sums it up quite nicely. The problem with the plan is not that it accentuates money; it is that it eliminates risk. And you know, like that, I understand that it is qualitative. It is a big change, but. You know the point I'm making, like, you know, it's like people's disgust with this it's not happening in isolation.
Well, I think the disgust has to do also with, like, what gives them the right? Like, who suddenly made them the bosses? Like, and it's like they've given it to themselves. It's, you know, like Napoleon crowning himself. We are going to be the rulers now. We're the kings now. And is anyone going to do anything about it? Like, here's the deal we offer you. We win, you all lose. Deal? That's what they're offering. And so, that's why I'm looking at the reaction thinking, they must have expected it was going to be bad. But, you know, how do they think they can actually pull this off? Because it's such a narrow group. It's like, I don't think this group has got sort of broad power or broad appeal. I think it leaves out so many countries, like so much of the world.
Do you honestly think that the five extra teams that qualify every year on the basis of performance, do you honestly think that that idea might have been put into the statement at around 7 o'clock last night?
Well,
as I read that, I was like, Jesus Christ, is this how ham-fisted this entire thing is?
But who are those five teams? Like, what's the story here? Like, is the idea that it's
part of the plan, they'd have said, this is how you qualify every year. But they didn't do that. They literally said, oh, and we'll throw five more teams in as well, because apparently you guys are upset that you can't just qualify for this thing because, you know, you're not really rich. Like that, yeah. Like that to me, just like the whole thing is so amateurish. Like,
yeah,
all of this money, all of these like massive loss-making giants telling you that this, you don't know how to run your business, and therefore we're going to take over football and show you how to run a business. Literally, every single one of them met a loss last year.
Yeah, I mean, okay, they're losing money, but is that's not necessarily a sign of. You know, again, it doesn't mean that they couldn't make money. Clearly, the possibility is there for those clubs to be profitable. What they would argue, I suppose, is that, number one, it's difficult to be profitable. I mean, number one, there's the pandemic, which they mentioned. There's these extraordinary circumstances. I mean, I think the European Club Association, their report suggested an overall loss of 5 billion euros to the European football industry this season arising from the pandemic, and that has different causes. Obviously, mainly the crowds not being allowed in, but also rebates and, you know, matches that didn't happen and TV contracts and all this kind of stuff. But they would argue that, number one, UEFA have presided over a system which makes it difficult for us to make profits. You know, you're talking about us losing money. Well, you know, you're going to lose money too if you're going to try and beat Manchester City on the field. You know, if you're going to try and keep up with PSG, who just come and take your best player, take Neymar for 222. He's not the best player. But he was the key player in the sort of future plan of the club. They're just going to come and take him, and you're going to have to try and keep up with that. Then you're probably going to find yourself going into loss as well. So they're sort of blaming UEFA for presiding over this. And then from the point of view of Premier League clubs, they're saying, well, we're losing money, but you know it's because that we're in the Premier League propping up all of this sort of fat class of the sort of lower 14 of the Premier League, which is actually this cosseted and privileged group of overfed soft clubs that actually people who have an income way beyond what they actually deserve, and we're sort of they're riding around on our backs and we're losing money. So these are all parts of this sort of sense of resentment that these clubs have towards the system, which has made them decide to turn around and just give two fingers. And and this is like, just because I'm trying to explain how things look from their point of view doesn't mean that I empathize with or agree with their point of view. I think what they're doing is a disgrace, and I think it's a bald-faced, it's a stroke, it's a bluff. It's like they've like grabbed all this stuff and they're staring back. And they're saying, "What are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do about it?" And it's a bluff. And it's like, if we can get away with this, and this is the way it's gonna be. But it's only gonna be that way if they do get away with it.
The secondary story of the day, Ken, as you described it, there is an update from Tottenham Hotspur. Just come in, hot off the press, as they say. Monday, 19th of April, 2021, 10:51 a.m. The club can today announce that Jose Mourinho and his coaching staff, Joao Sacramento, Nuno Santos, Carlos Lalin and Giovanni Serra, have been relieved of their duties. Chairman Daniel Levy said, "Jose and his coaching staff have been with us through some of our most challenging times as a club. Jose is a true professional who showed enormous resilience during the pandemic. On a personal level, I've enjoyed working with him and regret that things have not worked out as we have both envisaged. He will always be welcome here, and we should like to thank him and his coaching staff for their contribution." Ryan Mason will take first team training today. A further update will follow in due course. So that's that.
Well, that's good. I mean, I don't know if it's gonna distract people from the main story for too long. To be honest, you know, that statement they put it. You were talking about how sort of amateurish it feels. You know, there's this sort of tacked on thing about women's football. Yeah, we're gonna set up a women's version. Yeah. Women's football. Some of the quotes are just so dumb. Like, listen to Andrea Agnelli's quote. "Our 1,200 clubs represent billions of fans across the globe and 99 European trophies. We have come together at this critical moment, enabling European competition to be transformed, putting the game we love in a sustainable footing for the long-term future." Sustainable for who? Right. "Substantially increasing solidarity and giving fans and amateur players a regular flow of headline fixtures that will feed their passion for the game while providing them with engaging role models." Engaging role models. Can you believe that this man put his name to that statement? I mean, the idea that they're increasing solidarity. I mean, this is an element which was missing. Because, okay, we should say, this story, the first I saw of it was Martin Ziegler. Martin Ziegler's report in the Times, and then Tariq Panja, who we're going to be speaking to very shortly, in the New York Times, also reported. But both these journalists and other journalists have already reported most of the plan. Like, in January, Martin Ziegler had a report which differed very little from the one that came out yesterday. The only difference was that back then it seemed like a bit of spitballing. You know what I mean? It seemed like, oh, you know, here's a kind of a mad idea some people have come up with. You know, like Jacob Rees-Mogg's dad's book about, like, the sovereign individual. Well, I mean, yeah, there's some mad stuff in here, but, like, I mean, at least it's just some crazy old guy's book. you know what I mean? Like, whereas now it's like, oh my God, they're all announcing that they're joining us. Like, this is actually, they're actually trying to make this happen. That's the difference here. But one thing that was absent from the reports was this bit. The new annual tournament will provide the report in January and the report then, they didn't give much attention to this idea. The new annual tournament will provide significantly greater economic growth and support for European football via a long-term commitment to uncapped solidarity payments, which will grow in line with league revenues. These solidarity payments will be substantially higher than those generated by the current European competition and are expected to be in excess of 10 billion euros during the course of the initial commitment period of the clubs. In addition, the competition will be built on a sustainable financial foundation with all founding clubs signing up to a spending framework. So there's that spending framework thing is like the American idea. You know, if we can only salary spend cap. A certain amount, yeah. Salary cap, certain amount, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that, you know, you can't do a PSG on it in this little closed club. You know what I mean? We can have fairness within the walls that we've built for ourselves, walling out the rest of the world. But this whole idea of solidarity, they call it solidarity, but what they're doing is they're closing out the rest of the world, and then they're kicking down a few coins, and they're saying, there you go. You know, you can be happy with that. But actually, you can't be part of this anymore. It's like, yeah, you know, we've taken away from you the opportunity to be part of, you know, the actual top football competition, you know, which we're going to ensure this is, because we're going to have more money than anybody else. We're not going to let you be part of it, but here, have some money and shut your mouth. That's kind of the plan. And there's something really ugly and arrogant about this that it makes me feel as though it's the deal they're offering is not good enough to be accepted, even by the cowed and beaten down and sort of disorientated and, you know, apathetic football fans and sort of clubs of Europe. I just don't think it's enough. It's like you know that game, the ultimatum game, I think it's called. It's one of those sort of things in game theory where, you know, if you've got like, I think it's the ultimatum game. It's the one where basically someone has got like $100 and they get to keep as much of they get to keep as much of the dollars as they can get away with, but they have to make an offer to another person of some of the money. And if the other person accepts it, then both of them get to keep the amount that, you know, is in the offer. Like, say I've got $100 and I say, hey, Merv, you know, how about I give you $10?
I'll take it.
You'll say, yeah, okay, so rationally speaking, you should take it because now you've got $10 where previously you've got zero. But that's not actually what happens because it's people doing it. It's not, they're not like rational, not completely rational entities. We're like, well, no, this is totally unfair. You've got 90 and I've got, and you're only offering me 10. Why should I agree to this? You know, I'd rather have zero if it meant that you lost the 90 that you're planning to keep. And so that's what happens. So in fact, the equilibrium offer is much higher. Like, it's much closer to 50-50 because people just say no. Like, no, sorry, it doesn't sound like a good deal to me. And I kind of feel as though this deal is a bit like that. Like the kind of arrogant assumption that they could just continue to play in the Premier League, for instance. But how would that work? Like, the Premier League, these clubs would sort of tower above the Premier League. Now, you could say, well, they already do. What would be the difference? But, like, they don't really. Look at Arsenal,
four
for
of them
instance.
Are the top four at the moment.
Just to clarify that, right? So the statement late last night said midweek fixtures, this is in the new league, with all participating clubs continuing to compete in their respective national leagues, preserving the traditional domestic match calendar, which remains at the heart of the club game. So what they're saying is we're going to stay and compete in the Premier League and in La Liga and so on. While competing in this. So essentially, what's interesting about that is I always thought of a European breakaway league as maybe breaking away from all the domestic leagues. That would be the thing. You'd get five. But this is a different thing. Essentially, it's breaking away from the Champions League, really. And in their eyes, it's going to keep the Premier League and all those other leagues intact.
Yeah, that's their idea. But I don't, like, I mean, how can that work? I mean, why would you agree to that as a Premier League club? I mean, you know, maybe, again, this is happening recently. Is it an offer that would be attractive to Premier League clubs? I mean, it seems to me no, because it's creating an unfair competition. Like, it's creating a separate tier of clubs and then saying, well, they'll also play in this. You know, because these clubs are all going to be, they're all going to be vastly wealthier than the clubs who aren't in the, you know, in the Super League under this plan. So it would kind of be unfair almost to have them in the... And you could say, well, you already get that with the Champions League. But with the Champions League, you do have to qualify. I mean, clubs can do an Arsenal on it, you know? Like, Man United missed the Champions League for quite... Like, Man United are maybe a bad example because they're such a kind of a huge wealthy club in the first place. But look at, you know, the kind of situation that Arsenal have fallen into, or the situation Tottenham could easily be falling into by missing the Champions League a couple of years in a row. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like if the argument was 12 clubs that are always in the Champions League all the time anyway, I mean, it is kind of different. Like the idea that Spurs could be one of these clubs.
I know. It's like, just offensive to every idea of natural justice. It is. Like, Tottenham, like, are you serious? I just think it's a fatal flaw.
It is a fatal flaw. Like whatever argument these clubs thought that they were making, I don't know how they could make it with Spurs in it. Like, they haven't won their old league since 1961. And these guys are supposed to be, like, the idea of competition, like, they've grown beyond the Premier League, even without winning it or coming close to winning it. Or its predecessor for 60 years. 60 years! Like, it is unbelievable, this idea that, like, listen, we can't be held back by a league we haven't won in 60 years any longer. We've outgrown it. It's, you know, it served its purpose, but we're Tottenham Hotspur. We can no longer be a giant walking around amongst these Lilliputians. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Well, you know, I mean, I obviously looked at these when each club is tweeting it, I was clicking on their the tweet just to have a look at some of the replies or whatever. And I could see in the Tottenham ones, someone was saying, like, you know, just be grateful that we're involved here, you know. And I'm sure there probably would be some people who would take that, because everyone sort of senses that life's going to be pretty cold outside the wall. You know what I mean? If this goes through, like, people instinctively know that, right? Because you've got a situation where you've got this general sort of financial or economic crisis across European football, and these clubs are scrambling to try to get above that. And who cares? Like, that's what makes the quotes just so cynical. Like Paris saying, "Oh, we're doing this for the good of the game, and we're going to give solidarity payment." You're just like, oh, it's actually disgusting. Like, it's really horrible. Oh, it's so horrible. But everybody knows that, you know, if you're not in this. But the thing is, there's so many people who are left out. Like, it just seems like a really badly structured way to go about having a Super League. It's just like, this is not how you should do it. Like, the reason that they haven't been able to do it before, or that it's taken maybe so long to do, is because this is a system that has arisen, you know, rather than been designed. It's sort of grown up this way in this jumble across Europe in lots and lots of different countries. Whereas, you know, with the NFL, they're like, oh, you know, Phoenix is like a coming city. You know, let's stick a team in there. You know, that's sort of the way that sport has evolved. It's like a top down, rationally designed business, which European football isn't like at all.
Now just like the NFL model, which is being compared to, has also, I mean, it's great that, oh, here's a new city that we can put a team in, but the team then gets ripped away from another city, or has done, you know, there have been expansion teams as well, but I mean, there have been many moments in the history of American sport where teams have been ripped from the heart of their, you know, of the city that they grew up in, to just go somewhere else where there's more money. So, but I suppose you're talking about it more in this context, more as how it could work as a business, as opposed to something that, you know, something admirable for society.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is a silly way. I think this is going to be laughed out of.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think so. I think that their bluff will be called. I think they'll end up backing down. Yeah. I mean, you know, you do have a question, you know, if they stick together, are they desperate enough to do this? The fans not being there at the moment is an interesting one. Like, if there ever was a time to test the loyalty of your fans, is it really wise to do that after they've been locked out of your ground for more than a year? I mean, if you ever were going to break a habit, like, wouldn't that be the time? You know, I'd be interested to see, for instance, what somebody like Jurgen Klopp says. You know, because you saw yesterday that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was being asked after the game, oh, what do you think about this, you know, the Super League, by Jeff Shreves, and he's like, well, you know, it's not really my area. I haven't really, I've just seen it like yourself, you know, I'm just trying to get more information, you know, I'll get back to you. You know, Rodgers obviously isn't managing a Super League club, but I saw him being asked about it. Klopp Liverpool are playing Leeds tonight. So what's he going to say about it? I mean, he's literally been on record in the past saying, I don't want this to happen. Now, apparently have you spoken to your owners about it? You said you don't want it to happen. Well, they apparently do. You disagree with them about that. You know, you happy with that? You happy to continue here? It's going to be interesting. He's had a fairly tough season. Maybe he might look at this and go, oh God, you know, do I really need this? I'm not sure. I suppose if you are managing a team, you want to be managing one of these teams. I don't know. I really don't know.
Oh, so much we don't know, but let's work on what we do know for the time being. We'll wrap this report in sport and hear from Miguel and Tarek on this story. I should mention this interview with the two boys was conducted a little bit earlier this morning before the Jose news came in.
From Ireland's second captain show.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
This is not a dig at football people who know the game.
No respect, no honour.
Put your respect on my day.
Dog shit is bad, aren't
you? But who plays rugby?
I imagine it was like something you would expect to see in a porno movie.
No, they don't.
But they do.
Sorry, on. They do not.
Then the balls.
Shut up, the two of you. I just want to play commentary at a goal.
Fall up and I'll go.
Fall up and I'll
go.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like Nick.
You get the ball forward, you compete, you chase people, you close people down, you create excitement, you win balls when you shouldn't win balls, you commit yourself to the game.
Well, it's always nice nice to have a meaty football story to talk about on Monday's podcast. Tarek Panja has been reporting on this one for the New York Times. Tarek, how are you?
I'm all right. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah. Good to get your perspective on this. And Miguel Delaney has been writing about it for The Independent. Miguel, how are things?
Not too bad. It's all tired and jarred, I have to say. Jarred in the sense I'm shocked, not that I've been drinking.
Oh, well, that's okay, because it is 20 past nine as we record. Yeah. So.
tired and emotional.
Yeah. Well, I'd say that's the way the a lot of the other clubs around Europe who aren't part of this breakaway group are probably feeling right now as well. I mean, Tarek, you were among the first to break this story yesterday. The outline of it has been there for a while. Like, in some ways, it shouldn't be a shock. We knew this could be coming, but it still feels like such a seismic moment. Why did these only 12 clubs at the moment decide to make their move now, do you think?
Well, they decided to make their move now because they're a little bit late. They were going to do it last week. I mean, that's the weird thing. It's maybe shocking, but not surprising. This project was leaked in January, and there've been other leaks before that. This was the direction of travel, I guess. Until you kind of see the statement and to know, you think, are they really going to go through with it this time? I think there was an element of that. But given the actors involved, the characters who own the teams at the moment, I suppose this was a logical conclusion. They're so determined to make this type of thing happen. They pressed the button and they've done it now because, you know, as we're recording this, UEFA Exco is sitting in a room in Montreux in Switzerland, voting through the new Champions League for 2024, the 36-team so-called Swiss model system that they hoped would sort of quieten some of these big beasts and have them kind of go along with them. And that clearly wasn't enough. And the sad thing is for them, a lot of relationships are broken. You have someone like Andrea Agnelli, who sits on the UEFA Executive Committee, who up until Saturday, was telling you Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, that yes, he's in agreement, and it would be signing up to the Champions League reforms. You have Ed Woodward last Friday in a similar committee, keeping his mouth shut and seeing this proposal pass through for ratification today. The amount of duplicitous behaviour here has been breathtaking.
Miguel, what is your initial reaction to what's gone on over the last 24 hours?
Oh, I think it's the most significant moment in football history. And I suppose it. I mean, this is something that, I suppose, as Tarek has said, has been threatened for so long. Really, the game has, the mechanisms were put in place that this was some way inevitable, but it's still concrete in that football's historic and unique unity, basically the pyramid system that has still existed from basically any grassroots club right up to the kind of World Cup trophy, that's now about to be smashed, structurally smashed, with the creation of this almost kind of like an adjunct to the game, and this partially closed off competition. I think it will happen. I think the clubs feel they just have the force of numbers. That's from the money involved to the global fan base. I mean, that's another kind of interesting angle to this, I suppose, especially amid what are going to be some of the strongest possible protests from supporters' trusts. I think potential demonstrations at stadiums today, from what we hear. But the clubs ultimately think that they have, I mean, this is the basis behind the idea and why football has been going in this direction for some time, that they've accumulated such a massive fan base to basically, to the detriment of almost everyone else in the game, that these are, they occupy the minds of more people in football than anyone else, that they feel that once this gets started, you know, the show will just go on. Everyone will eventually tune in and everyone will get on with it.
Does that chime with what you're hearing, Tarek, that you know, this was all foreseen, no one's particularly fazed by the by all of this anger on the internet?
Well, you only have to look as far. It'd be amazing if they are surprised by this. Because another significant breakaway attempt happened not that long ago. And I think you may have covered it on your show, Project Big Picture. Same actors as far as the English teams are concerned, driven by the Glazer family at Man United and FSG John Henry at Liverpool and his gang, and the the reaction was similar. It was loud, it was negative, and it went on for days. In the end, it didn't go on for days, actually. They ended the project pretty quickly. I think it lasted about 24 hours before they signed a joint communique with the Premier League. This is what I found quite strange as well. The Premier League was unanimous in saying that they wouldn't support a breakaway or Project Big Picture. And I found that strange, given how could it be unanimous, given that the people pushing it were two of their own members. It was very, very odd. But no, they must have anticipated this. They've hired a bunch of PR consultants all over Europe. They pay these sort of people a lot of money. I mean, what are they paying them for? This sort of advice they'd give them. These are the people who would be able to read the room. I just think they think they're able to brazen it out. And Miguel mentioned quite rightly, there's going to be fan protests and things like that. But I think what we're talking about, we have to sort of say fans and fans. I'm not saying one group of fans is more important than another. There is a subtle difference, or maybe less than a subtle difference, between a local match-going supporter and the millions of people that support these teams elsewhere. So far, the opposition perhaps has been local and loud and large in that, among that cohort. But what these guys are looking for is kind of the new football, I guess. These fans in faraway places who consume football as entertainment, nuggets of entertainment, are willing to put their hands in their pockets and buy things, maybe buy TV rights to watch these guys.
That's exactly it as well. I mean, obviously, I don't want to be... I'm in principle and kind of philosophically against this idea. But they're basically getting ahead of the game in some ways, because from a lot of research, and I think this is something you guys have touched on the show before, particularly in terms of some of like Nelly's ideas about how people consume the game and talk of, you know, putting the last 15 minutes behind a paywall. But it does feel like they're getting in ahead of the way support is travelling, which is basically consuming football entirely through the internet, so it can be a medium where we can chat with friends online, where I think there's already been sorts of kind of stark stats about how the number of young people, say below the age of 24, no longer support a local team but support one of the big six or a major club, which are one of these global franchises. And I suppose something we're getting into now is that if this does become the dominant competition, say if eventually get to the point where the domestic leagues kick them out, or I mean it does feel no matter what this is going to just take over, but some of the potential ramifications are that clubs will be unanchored from their local community, and we could see them move around different locations in the way you would associate with American sport.
You know, the thing that you've mentioned there, the idea of the other clubs kicking them out, I mean, this is a real interesting question here of who's going to call whose bluff.
Yeah,
because, you know, say the big six and the Premier League is sort of talking tough, but, you know, without these six clubs, then suddenly the Premier League isn't really as attractive a prospect anymore. And yet the plan, this Super League plan does involve all of the clubs continuing to play in their domestic league as usual. That's the plan. And this letter, Tarek, you mentioned that they'd hired PR firms. They've also hired lawyers.
Yes.
This letter that their lawyers have written to Gianni Infantino and Seferin at UEFA includes lines like, "Your formal statement does compel us to take protective steps to secure ourselves against such an adverse reaction, which would not only jeopardize the funding commitment under the grant, but significantly would be unlawful." The grant they're referring to here is this, I guess, $6 billion that they're getting from their
$4 billion.
Okay, from J.P. Morgan, who are like the bankers. We can kind of talk about the finance maybe in a minute. But the point here is that this letter, which goes on to say, we'll take all reasonable actions to protect the interests of the competition and our stakeholders, given the irreparable damage that would be suffered if for any reason we were deprived of the opportunity to form promptly the competition and distribute the proceeds of the grant. So it sounds like a prompt disbursement of this grant is pretty key to this plan being a success. But if the leagues are saying, no, you can't participate in our leagues, I mean, it appears the lawyers here are admitting that would be a big problem for the financial backers. Maybe they wouldn't be prepared to go ahead with it under those circumstances, and those appear to be the circumstances.
yeah, well, that's the threat, and this is going to be a test. The other thing is, how fast does the legal system work? I mean, we're talking about seismic changes to a cultural institution across Europe for that's been in place for decades. How quickly can lawyers on either side get a resolution to this? I can't imagine it being that quick. And in terms of the hurry, I think part of it is artifice, and they're using the pandemic to say, oh my God, we're going to go bust. Football's going to go bust. This really needs to happen. If you read that letter, there's a section in there saying, we are really hurt. And they are. Look, there are losses at these clubs. Some of them, I must say, are self-inflicted and nothing to do with the pandemic, just bad management. But they're saying, look, this really needs to happen. Otherwise, all hell will break loose and we're going to be in real trouble. So you're going to have to do it. But yeah, they've hired lawyers. But don't, the other side has too. I mean, look, at a stroke, the value of Premier League TV deals, for example, disappears. If this competition happens and these guys stay, the Premier League isn't worth nowhere near any the value that these broadcasters are currently paying. UEFA has got deals with companies across the world for the Champions League. Those rights are worth nothing. There's going to be counter legal action from the other side too.
But the thing about it, sorry, go on, continue, finish your point. I'm sorry, I'm just annoyed by so much of what you're saying that I feel the need to jump in. But please,
just to say that the appeal of these competitions is the word competition, isn't it? I mean, what are you watching? Yeah. You're going to have these teams arriving with this hundreds of millions more in their bank accounts to buy better players, but also they're guaranteed to be in this competition, which is the elite competition. So if you look at the Premier League right now, Manchester City are walking away with the Premier League playing pretty decent football, and they're going to win it. The relegation spots are more or less. Two of them, it seems like, are done and dusted. I might be wrong there. But the real interesting element of the Premier League this season, for me, has been these kind of insurgents threatening the Champions League places. It's been really interesting. West Ham, for example, Leicester right up there. That doesn't matter. So what the hell are you watching? None of these games will have anything riding on them. Maybe a title race that so far has really involved more than two teams. So the value is decimated. Across the board.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, looking at the Premier League, it would so clearly be the secondary competition to this, to the main event. Just the sort of arrogant assumption that the other Premier League clubs would be content to say, okay, yeah, you can play in the big competition and make stupendous amounts of money doing that, and then come and play against us. We still get to play in something called the Champions League. Because this is a kind of funny thing, is that they're saying, well, of course the Champions League would go on. You guys could have your little Champions League. You know what I mean? Like, why do you see, Miguel, a way in which it makes any sense for the other 14 Premier League clubs to actually acquiesce to this? Maybe Everton and Leicester and West Ham and other such clubs would look at this and go, okay, so we'd get to play in this secondary Champions League. Is that really so bad?
Well, I think at the moment why these Super League clubs think they have it all over a barrel is because, and as Tarek alluded to there, the attractiveness of the Premier League, and which means the money that all these other clubs get, is still dependent on them. This is why we're going to be at a bind. It's why we won't today have clubs immediately thrown out of competitions, because it'll undermine contracts and also undermine earning power. Now, yeah, it's possible at some time in the medium-term future that once football resets itself, that leagues can develop in another way and kind of, clubs like Everton or Newcastle, Aston Villa can see the value in suddenly not being in a league that has this ceiling. But that's only going to be the case after a significant amount of fallout. And a fallout that is going to be of unprecedented levels that we've never seen before. And it just, because of all these contracts, it already instinctively feels to me that we're going to have a bit of a stalemate situation for a while, where these clubs are basically going to press on with the plans. And everyone else is kind of has to kind of get on board with it, just because if they don't, the broadcasting contracts they've got, as Tarek has alluded to, are just going to be crippled.
They already are. If we're in a negotiation now, imagine the Premier League or UEFA was in the final throes of a negotiation with a TV company, might have signed this week, next week. There is no way that company could, especially if it's a listed company, you know, with fiduciary duties, etc., in good conscience sign a deal, knowing this thing is around the corner. I think everything is frozen now.
Just on that as well, I was told yesterday that the Premier League was apparently supposed, and this has been used as a rationalisation for why this is happening, but last month the Premier League was supposed to put an initial plan about a new broadcasting contract with Sky towards its members, and they didn't. And from what I was told, that basically spooked the Big Six, and I suppose it's why they're alluding to stuff like the pandemic, because I mean, I think everyone did expect the broadcasting price to fall up in this next cycle of deals. And this is something they very much got their eye on. But you're totally right. All of this is just fatally undermined because no one knows what it's going to look like. And until the biggest show in town is just going to be this Super League. I mean, I have to, like, just as we start to weigh everything up, it's obviously well beyond any sort of negotiating position or a bluff or anything like that. But I just can't see a way in which the road to this is diverted. I think it's just going to happen.
Can you see any way? Tarek, Miguel's pretty clear that he thinks it is going to happen. I mean, we've mentioned fans' protest. That might be an element. Also, possible legal challenges. But also just the basic thing of, at the moment, the clubs being potentially banned from their own domestic leagues, and maybe even more to the point, players potentially being banned from international competition. Like, surely, if the top players aren't allowed to play in a World Cup, they're not going to sign up to anything. They're not going to play for a club that signs up to anything that's going to make that a reality. So all that stuff together, to me, sounds like quite a compelling case against this actually going forward. What do you think?
I don't know. In terms of whether the amount of money they're likely to be offered is going to be astronomical, how much is too much? It's hard to know. The numbers have been going up astronomically year by year, it seems, in terms of whatever transfer fees and wages. However, I guess one of the things these guys want to control is that in the leaked documents, there was this idea that almost guaranteed profitability for these clubs, which is what the owners want, and you know, might cap some of the earning power of the players. But the quantum of cash involved means they're certainly going to have pay rises to players if they go there.
So sorry, are you saying that you think that players would stomach not playing for their countries in the top competitions if they're getting well paid enough to play in this Super League for their clubs?
I think it's worth seeing. I'm not sure all of them are that as committed to their countries as we like to think they are. And I think, you know, this I think it's good, time will tell. And also, I don't know if we're going to get to that point, because I think we can talk about it later, but where FIFA sits in all of this, it's very intriguing. But one thing I'd like to ask, or one thing I'm interested in. Okay, so if it doesn't start this summer and starts next summer or the summer after that, what are UEFA going to do with these 12 teams? There's going to be a Champions League tournament next year. Are you going to have these bandits who are going to pretty much destroyed your event in for essentially the last throes of a dying competition, this thing that the world has enjoyed since 1955, that these guys are going to break? Are you going to keep them playing in the Champions League until they walk out? Are you going to throw them out of that? I think from what I understand, you know, Seferin is furious. He does a good line in Fury. We've seen some of those press conferences. We've attended those. It'd be interesting to see whether, you know, he actually bites a bullet and says, right, lads, sorry, you're not in this anymore. You've decided what you're going to do. Bye. You're not in the Champions League next year. But again, that just, it's Pandora's box, isn't it? We're going to talk about those TV rights, the money, etc., broadcasters. It goes round and round.
But just on that as well. Sorry, it's something I can't get away from when I keep thinking about this. And I know this sounds like a kind of almost a childishly naive point. But I mean, and as grotesque as the modern Champions League has become because of the force of these big clubs, but just as you mentioned there, like this history going back to 1955. That's almost essentially what this is. It's the obliteration of football history. Like, when you watch a big game between these teams in the Champions League, it's imbued with that, the prestige and the gravitas of seven decades. I mean, even the music, as infantile as that is, it just lends that extra air of prestige to it all.
And the music's only been there since 1992, Miguel.
But even that's quite a long history at this point.
The traditions in football are fairly malleable. Sorry, go on. I keep interrupting too. I'm just wound up by this show.
But that's exactly... And now we're just... It's like nothing else matters. Nothing from before matters now. It's just a clean slate for this kind of garish thing with a bizarre logo that feels barely thought through.
I'm surprised by both of you seeming to think that this is going to work. This is not going to work. Like this is a terrible idea. It's badly designed. I mean, the idea of a closed shop Super League spanning Europe is something that could, in my mind, it could obviously work. You can see it working in the United States. The model is, there's a clear model there in the NFL, the NBA. This is not that. This is 20 teams, but at the moment, 12 teams, three of the teams are from London. Like,
completely, Ken, 100% with you on this. This is not spanning the European continent at all, is it?
No, it's three countries. Like, Farage ridiculously referred to it as a European Union of Football. It's literally three teams from three countries, one of which isn't even in the European Union. But the point is, it's so narrow. Like, if Europe could support a 32, like the NFL has 32 teams, the NBA has 32, the Champions League has 32 teams, actually is about to expand to 36, or was due to announce that today. This is 20, and it appears to be from a really narrow base. So I think the problem with the Super League, the closed shop Super League idea in Europe, has always been, how do we actually get to it? Because how do we decide who's in it? How do we decide who's in it? And it turns out that the way we decide who's in it is the clubs come forward and say, it's us. It's going to be us. We're the ones. Everybody else can accept that they are the secondary people. We are the master clubs, and it's going to be us. We are the self-appointed group. But this group is too small.
Well, that's because they haven't been able to persuade the French and German clubs either.
That's why I think this idea is weak. Like there aren't enough of them. Like if they had gone around Europe and they'd gone, you know, Galatasaray are in, Benfica are in, you know, Zenit St. Petersburg are in, you know, we've got Red Star Belgrade, we've got Napoli, you know, if we've got Ajax, we've got and Feyenoord, you know, if we've got Celtic and Rangers, if they'd done this, then you'd be looking at going, oof. You know, this might work. But instead, it's like, we've got Spurs, Arsenal, and Chelsea. You know, like, well, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's also a snapshot of a moment in time. I mean, look, I think all of us are a certain age. Chelsea, to sort of current generation of fans, are a massive club, I guess. But that's only since, really Roman Abramovich took over Chelsea. I remember them being relegated. I also remember Manchester City never being part of the conversation. Early days of the Premier League, you know, you had Aston Villa there, Leeds United. It's just, this is a moment in time that we've frozen and said, you guys are the big clubs and you're the chosen ones to go here. But the point I wanted to make earlier, you said this is a closed super, and it is in large respects, but I've got a feeling, I don't know, I might be proved wrong, been proved wrong before, that FIFA has been very much involved in talks with these guys, this group. Gianni Infantino has talked about wanting super leagues elsewhere. Notably, he's backed one in Africa. He has created a World Cup of Clubs, the Club World Cup 2014 tournament that would have taken place this summer, but for the pandemic in China. He wants that to be played every 2 years, and he wants these feeder leagues that will create the entrance for that competition. Florentino Perez met Gianni Infantino about a year and a half ago for one of these public meetings, forget what they're doing behind the scenes, to create this new body, the World Club Forum or something like this. This felt like a direction of travel. In January, FIFA put a statement out under pressure from UEFA when these leaks first started to say that anyone who... is involved essentially a cowboy league that is unsanctioned, you know, faces penalties, etc. And then yesterday, deafening silence all day as politicians, UEFA, clubs, leagues put all these statements out. And then FIFA, just after this announcement was official, after about 11 p.m., put out what I think is quite a meek statement. And it said that we don't support closed breakaway leagues. This one says there'll be five spots open every year. So it's you know it's closed, but it's not really closed. You know, if you want to find a wrinkle, I just have a sense that FIFA aren't that upset about this. Gianni Infantino wants to control club football. He misses it from his days at UEFA. He also has an extremely awful relationship with Alexander Seferin. And this, to me, seems like something he can get behind, if I'm honest with you.
But on that as well, isn't it basically, there's also, whatever about Infantino himself, there's long been envy at the top of FIFA about the fact that the Champions League has basically become the global competition and has really kind of started to supersede the World Cup in terms of its effect on football consciousness. So, I mean, it's as if it's almost... And the idea behind the Club World Cup that was supposed to go ahead last year was to try and claim some of that. But just the one thing I was thinking there, as you mentioned, the snapshot in time. I mean, I think this is a key point in all of this. I don't think it is a snapshot. I think it was a fixed image of the future for some time. And this is something we can't really get away from in all this, that basically football was becoming broken. Because of all these mechanisms, because of the growth of these clubs, they'd reached such a size that they were beginning to affect the unpredictability of the game itself, which of course has been like why it's the most popular sport in the world. And we can see it in, you know, what's happened in the French league, in the Italian league, what had the potential to happen in England if City say were going to win a second domestic treble in 3 years. Like the direction of football was only going one way, and it needed some kind of huge intervention. Now, that intervention should have been mass redistribution of wealth. That was the only thing that basically could stop this. But that was never going to happen due to the lack of regulation, due to the kind of powers in place. And it is why I think the problem is going to get worse. Something needed to happen. But it was almost as if a Super League was... We got to the point where it was the only logical and potential... I'm going to put it in quote marks, solution to this problem. That the game had basically... run itself into a corner. And again, I don't mean that this is a good thing. I think it's a horrifying act of greed, the worst we've seen in football's history. But football, and many of the people who would be most aggrieved today, they're some way responsible for the situation we've got to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, speaking of the idea of a snapshot, I mean, I saw Dave Jones on Sky yesterday refer to the traditional Big Six, and he appeared to be speaking about a group that included Manchester City and Chelsea. I mean, this is a point that you're making, Derek. Like... You know, these actually it is the top six clubs by trophies won in the history of English football, but only recently got that way thanks to certain events happening at Chelsea and Man City. But the point is, I suppose, it shows that people's attitudes can change. You know, the traditions of football we talk about needn't necessarily be very old to feel like traditions. So I'm asking you both if you believe that in 1 year's time, remember Florentino Perez, the first president of the European of the Super League wants this to start in August. Do you think that maybe in a year's time we might be talking to you guys on this podcast, assuming we're still around, about like what do we think is going to happen in the Super League semi-finals?
I don't think this thing's going to start in August, if I'm honest with you. However, direction of travel seems to be one way. I think the only kind of intervention that may work, and it's belated, really, this sport. I mean, you know, we're on the show. It's so many passions have been stoked in the last 24 hours. Millions of people around the world are interested, concerned. You know, it's on the front pages of newspapers. So what really sort of frustrates me is if this sort of cultural institution was so important to so many people. Forget FIFA and UEFA. Where were kind of governments here? Where was the European Union? This stuff should have been safeguarded. They've allowed these guys. It could be these guys. It could be another group. It doesn't matter who's wearing the suit. They allowed to turn this sport into a purely commercial endeavor, right? And once you've done that, you could have an argument from the people who bought into it. So hang on, I bought this as a business. It's mine. I should be able to do whatever I want. Where were the safeguards before? Now there's all this hand wringing. You see Boris Johnson, Emmanuel Macron, and all this. Something must be done. If these safeguards were in place, before 20 years ago, I mean, this stuff's been talked about for years. Why do we have to wait till the building that you knew was going to be satellite and on fire to suddenly then start sending 50 fire engines racing towards a fire that's gutted your building that was inevitably going to catch fire? I really don't understand. So maybe at the 11th hour, the power of institutions outside of football may come to bear on this.
Yeah, that's precisely what I mean when I say about kind of some of the people most aggrieved are some way responsible, because basically social institutions weren't protected. But I mean, football clubs had grown to such a size, they had this immense social and political capital. They were, especially in England, they were open to almost anyone, and look at some of the figures that have come in to purchase them. But it's an interesting point that Tarek raised there, because last night I had someone from an EFL club onto me basically talking about how, you know, after what Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer said, that there is a legal mechanism in place where the British government can force compulsory purchase of business if those businesses aren't seen to be in British national interest, which is something, of course, that is even less protected now in terms of kind of restraining trade and whatever with Brexit. And
the government that was recently suggesting maybe the Premier League could let Saudi investors buy Newcastle is hardly going to step in and start
these are the questions that are going to start to be asked, and maybe you'd wonder even if the Labour Party will start pushing it. I mean, it is going to be a vote winner. let's not overlook that as well, but I do think it's too late. I can't really see that happening. I suppose even from a media perspective, we've got kind of decisions as well about how we cover this. I mean, it's obviously not quite the Qatar World Cup where there's a moral question about a boycott, but given what this is, there's all sorts of questions. Do we divest more of energy from covering traditional football, as which is what the domestic leagues have become, to this? I mean, it's the nature of media as well. This, no matter the complaints now, it's where the eyes are going to be. It's what's going to attract all attention. It's going to drive the internet, say, in the way that the Champions League or top of the Premier League does now. And that's what they're basically banking on. And the expectation is we're all going to fall in line. And it's difficult not to, I mean, it's depressing, but it's difficult not to see how that won't happen. Just on that as well, what's going to be interesting is the broadcaster, or more likely the streaming platform that carries this. There's a lot of murmurs on Sunday about who's actually involved, and that's something that hasn't become clear yet either.
Who do we think it is then? What's going to happen there?
I mean, people have broached me, possibly Google. I haven't heard that in as regards to that. I mean, that's just pure speculation.
Sure.
Just based on previous comments they've said, but that's something I suppose that has yet to be... It's ripe.
Yeah, I mean, that would clearly kind of be a big deal, because we can see at the moment that football is totally dominated by oil money, but tech companies have much more money than the oil industry now. Like, if a company like Amazon was to decide that this was a way in which they were going to drive Amazon Prime signups, you could see how that would work for them.
I think the passions this story has aroused were evident in that chat, guys. Brilliant stuff. Tarek, Miguel, thanks a million.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Fair to say anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not.
He was about 12. Everyone in the city knew about him, but no one had seen him.
Look how happy I was. What the fuck happened? No, really. What happened?
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Yeah, there was a little Jose reference in there, as I mentioned before the piece, that interview was recorded before Mourinho got sacked, such as the fast-moving nature of the news today. I mean, it is funny, even you mentioned you were on Spurs' Twitter account, Ken, a while back. Like, they're like 3 tweets ago, they're tweeting, Tottenham Hotspur, 100 Premier League performances, your favourite Lucas Moura moment. Then their next one is, leading European football clubs in its new Super League competition, including Spurs. And then their next one is Mourinho has been relieved of his duties. So it's kind of stepping up in importance of the stories they're covering there. By the way, I should say, if we're choosing sides here, just in, you know, UEFA versus the breakaway clubs, I'll have to nail my colours to the UEFA mast. They have quite literally bought my support, you guys. You remember I told you I'd been doggedly holding on to my ticket for Euro 2020 group game? Yeah, well,
you've got
despite
receipts
the risk,
from UEFA, have you?
I've got, yeah, by the time some people listen to this, Dublin will, certainly it appears that we're going to not be hosting any games because we can't guarantee a 25% capacity, and today is the deadline for giving UEFA those guarantees. So those games look like they're getting moved, but I did get, and if that's changed, by the way, look, you're going to have to forgive me. If we've survived the cut, then forget about this bit, but you know, everything's happening so fast. But anyway, I did get an email in my inbox 10 days ago offering another chance to return tickets and get a full refund as long as it's done before, not just me, I mean anyone else with tickets, before Thursday, April 22nd. So they're obviously giving everyone a chance to see what happens today and what cities are still involved. And then there is still one more belated opportunity to get the refund. So UEFA, what a bloody fine football
say what you like about UEFA, you get a square deal with them 100% of the time. Fair dues. Fair it is.
UEFA have made an absolute mess of it, you know, and that
of which of Euro 2020 or of the Champions League
of European football in general. I mean, they have been asleep at the wheel, like they're an incompetent organization. This situation, they're not blameless in this situation. Is what I mean. Like, I don't see UEFA as necessarily being the good guys in this, but I do think that they're slightly more preferable. It just comes down to that core fact of we're now electing ourselves as your rulers in perpetuity. That's just the bit, and you know, here, have some coins, and just sticks in the craw.
Again, you're not talking about UEFA giving me a refund here, Ken. We're back to talking about back to breakaway and the clubs getting some trickle down money. Yeah,
and it just seems.
I thought you briefly you were trying to tell Owen to bring UEFA to court for this. Make him
pay. No. It's
hit him where it hurts, Owen.
I think Owen and UEFA are pretty much quits at this stage.
Quits.
But yeah, I mean, that Miguel made the point there about the history as well. It is sort of interesting how fast it's all discarded, you know. I saw Ferguson had a statement about it, you know, saying, "Oh, you know, I don't know what's going on. I'm not part of the decision making process," and then referring to some of his own, you know, it felt like climbing Everest for a club like Aberdeen. And you could say, well, it doesn't happen. That sort of thing doesn't happen that much anyway, Fergie. You know, those days are over, Fergie. But the fact is that there was that you know, you were involved in the competition. You know, I mean, I remember being there with Dundalk. We're playing Legia Warsaw. You know, we're one game, well, one tie from the Champions League. You know, that possibility was there. And that's the thing that's being sort of snuffed out. Well, you know, there's
and
the Champions
know,
League.
Yeah, but. And you know, it's interesting that is the big plus point for fans and the big minus point for clubs. It's not like, you know, the argument is massively broad and there's like a ton of different things. Like, there are a ton of different things, but it boils down to fans think it's amazing that Dundalk can be one tie away from the Champions League. And the clubs, the 12 club breakaway clubs, and I'm sure a couple of other clubs that would love to be in it, that's exactly what they hate. Like, they hate the idea that they'd have to go to Dundalk to play a Champions League game. Like, they hate the idea that
well, Sorry, go on.
No, like the idea that we could be playing Real Madrid four times a year, but instead we have to play fucking Dundalk. It's ridiculous.
No, I think I don't even think it's that. I don't even think they really even mind playing Dundalk that much. I mean, Arsenal played Dundalk quite recently, didn't they? One of the Super League clubs. Sprinkling stardust all over Arsenal were when they arrived here. Just leaving a trail of stardust, like liquid stardust, like slime behind them here. It's the uncertainty that they don't like. The fact that you have to qualify every year. That's what makes it impossible to plan. You know, look at Liverpool now, you know, this wasn't in the script. Like, they're not, you know, if they don't qualify for the Champions League, what do they do then? You know, they've got this like half clapped out team that needs to be substantially rebuilt. They've lost a lot of money because of the pandemic, and now suddenly they're not even in the Champions League. Well, this is unacceptable. I mean, how can anyone plan? Of course, do you remember John Henry tweeted about before one of Man City sponsorship deals? Oh, what was the second highest bid? That's going back years ago. Like, he's been annoyed about this for years. You know, we're we're coming from the American sports background, it seems crazy that like there isn't some basic structure of fairness governing the closed league. But the thing is that if you can get relegated or if you can like not qualify for the competition, that's a massive source of uncertainty as well. So from an owner's point of view, they're like, we're the owners and this makes it impossible to run our businesses properly. We've got to get rid of this. But the thing is, they think they're the owners, but are they really the owners? Like, I mean, they are in the strict and technical legal sense, but we're about to see to what extent they really have ownership over these clubs. To what extent can they do what they want with these clubs? And to what extent is their ownership actually a kind of a nominal thing?
A stewardship, or is it actually...
Sure, they get the cash, they get to pay themselves the dividends, but do they actually get to do whatever they want with these clubs? That's the question that's going to be answered over the next few weeks.
Can I just say, by the way, I don't know if you two have deliberately been mentioning Dundalk here, but... More breaking news, 11 a.m. this morning. the 42.ie reports Filippo Giovagnoli and Shane Keegan have both left their roles.
Oh, my God.
At the Premier Division outfit. The club confirmed this news after reports of their departure circulated over the weekend. And it was all sorts going on in that we don't really have time to get into at this point of such a long...
But I'm sorry, sorry about the intro. You know, we would have had it higher up, but it's literally just happened. It's already done. There's nothing we can do.
Unbelievable. The club will conduct a thorough recruitment process for a new manager and will not make any further comment on the selection process until an appointment is made. Okay, that just about makes it into breaking news podcast. That was exciting. That show was so exciting. Had Murph cursing like he was in the middle of a David
like a Dublin Docker
image interview.
Like a Dublin Docker is what he called
it. Like a Dublin cyclist, I would say. Going by the O'Doherty Kimmage interview. All right, we'll wrap there. Thanks, guys.
Thanks
Owen. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. More, I'm sure, on these stories through the week on secondcaptains.com, on the World Service, I should say. And you can sign up on secondcaptains.com. Whew, take a breath, everybody.
I prefer really not to speak.
That's the second time it's gone off.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.